Last month, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey announced that the social media company would no longer display political advertisements on its platform. The move was intended as a way of slowing the spread of viral disinformation online. While political advertising has not been an economic juggernaut for Twitter, Facebook earned a reported $81 million from the Trump and Clinton presidential campaigns in 2016, and they're projected to earn over $400 million in 2020. And unlike Twitter, Facebook has sidestepped questions about how much they are willing to do to prevent the spread of misleading political ads on their site. When Mark Zuckerberg testified in front of the House Financial Services Committee last month, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tried to pin the Facebook CEO on the company's role in allowing untruths to find new audiences online.
Do you see a potential problem here with a complete lack of fact-checking on political advertisements?
Well, Congresswoman, I think lying is bad, and I think if you were to run an ad that had a lie, that would be bad. That's different from it being, in our position, the right thing to do to prevent your constituents or people in an election from seeing that you had lied.
Joining me now to talk about how social media companies are grappling with disinformation and political ads as 2020 approaches is Ramesh Srinivasan, a professor at UCLA and the author of Beyond the Valley. And we should also say that he's a Bernie Sanders 2020 national surrogate. Ramesh, welcome to the show.
Hello, Tanzina. It's nice to speak to you.
So digital ads are not a new phenomenon, but the companies that put them out to the rest of the world are starting to get involved in this conversation now. Twitter announced last month they'd be banning political advertising. Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey got a lot of positive press. What was your thought on that?
I mean, it was definitely a smart move for Jack and Twitter on a public relations perspective, you know, from that standpoint. I don't want to ascribe intentions, but in impact, it's actually a little bit disingenuous for several reasons. First of all, selling political ads is not Twitter's business model. Twitter sold just $3 million of political advertising in the 2018 midterm elections, whereas Facebook sold $300 million, so 100 times more. The real issue, you know, the one that I'm really trying to hammer home on in my book Beyond the Valley, but just in general in all of my work, is what are the decisions by which these companies are making around what counts as accurate information, credible information, what is considered truly journalistic or not. And those decisions are the ones that are going to determine what content is visible to whom in what manners.
Facebook earned $300 million in political advertising. They've been a big player in digital political advertising here. What's their relationship beyond just putting ads out? I mean, isn't Facebook also used for fundraising for political candidates?
Oh, absolutely. And the internet more largely still remains a mechanism of bringing people together, especially working and middle class people, you know, who represent the vast majority of the population in our country. Back in the day, we used to use the term crowdsourcing, you know, is this idea that the internet could bring people together. And that is absolutely still the case. That capacity remains within platforms like Twitter and Facebook. However, what is most problematic and what the real issue is, yet again, are the ethical and political decisions that are made around what content grabs our attention and therefore is made more visible versus what content is made less visible. Just to quickly follow up on the Twitter point, Tanzina, what Twitter's policy actually does is actually privilege corporate actors over grassroots organizations, whether they are grassroots organizations that are progressive politically or grassroots organizations that are even conservative politically. For example, imagine a climate change organization that's basing an ad that it wants to put out on scientific evidence saying, hey, we need to do something about fracking, for example. That would be considered political and therefore be disallowed by this new Twitter policy. However, a corporate report by British Petroleum or Shell or Exxon or what have you saying, hey, we're doing all these great things with the environment and we're investing in renewable energy, that would not be considered political.
Now, Ramesh, the thing is, you're also talking to us as a surrogate for the Bernie 2020 campaign. Does your role as a surrogate, I mean, it has to factor into your opinions on this?
It certainly does, in a sense. I mean, look, Senator Sanders' campaign is pretty unprecedented. It was absolutely in 2016, and it remains even more so because it is a campaign that the internet facilitates in the sense that it is a campaign of bringing working and middle class and small business, you know, kind of people and organizations together. As Senator Sanders said with Michael Bloomberg's entry into the race, if you can't build grassroots support for a campaign, you have no business running for president. So what is the mechanism by which Senator Sanders has been able to build grassroots support? Well, it's partly, of course, the internet, including Facebook. So, you know, say there's a winning line by Senator Sanders because I'm a national surrogate. I'm going to put that out on Facebook. Some of my friends might see it and they might pass it on. And there's a sense of maybe credibility because I'm the one posting it. The problem is in the middle of all of it, are algorithmic decisions being made based on assessments and predictions around what content will grab people's attention? And one thing we know more than anything is what grabs people's attention sometimes is false, hateful, or at least at the minimum, inflammatory content. And that's why content created by news sources, I'm saying news with scare quotes here, like Breitbart and the Daily Caller, was that content went very viral on Facebook in the context of the 2016 election, and we've seen numerous examples of that since. And that's not just true with Facebook. That's occurred with YouTube, Google News, to some extent with Twitter as well.
We're heading into 2020, Ramesh. What types of political advertising are you worried or excited about that we'll see online? I mean, is Facebook hasn't said no to political advertising yet?
Absolutely not. And I think Facebook remaining with political advertising is not inherently the problem here. I think the problem is again, these decisions around what ads are going to be shown and who has power over deciding what is considered legitimate or not. I don't think a lot has changed. And so that's the issue. The issue is that these tech companies are not interested or open to actual real governance and accountability from outside. Because otherwise we get situations where, you know, Facebook has some mysterious independent organization that Mark Zuckerberg kept referring to in front of Congress that somehow considers the Daily Caller as a very legitimate news source. So the question is why? Have they answered that question? Absolutely not.
And yet there are millions and millions of dollars to be made. Ramesh Srinivasan is a professor at UCLA and the author of Beyond the Valley. He's also a Bernie Sanders 2020 national surrogate. Ramesh, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tanzina.